Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Bible Answer Man. Your host is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. CRI is on the air defending the Christian faith because truth matters. What is the meaning of life? Are we here alone as mere products of chance? Or are we part of a creator's enormous tapestry of creation? Returning for a second day are Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. Together, they've penned a book entitled A Meaningful World. We're making this book available through CRI when you call 888-7000-CRI. Now let's get the program started with our host, Hank Hanegraaff.
And I guess it would be an understatement for me to say I am exhilarated to have Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt with me on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. I find them to be extraordinary gentlemen who have gone to great length to stretch us in very important places. I want to start by underscoring a chapter, chapter 6 in your book, where you make the point that we live in a cosmic home designed for discovery.
Yeah, and of course, the big influence there is a book and a film that you've highlighted on this show before, and that is The Privileged Planet. You had Jay Richards on here a while back. The co-author of that, Guillermo Gonzalez, is an astrobiologist. He's done NASA-funded research. And in that chapter, we show in very, very kind of quick succession how the same features of our planet, the way it's situated, the way it's designed, with the large moon, with the plate tectonics, the clear atmosphere, on and on the list could go, that contribute to making this a habitable planet. Scientists, atheists, non-atheists alike now agree that planet Earth is an extraordinarily unusual planet in the universe because of all these factors that come together. Those same factors also make it a superb place for making a range of scientific discoveries. When you find a massive telescope on a mountain in Hawaii, high mountain in Hawaii, you immediately infer, oh, well, they put it up here so that there'd be a thinner atmosphere, it'd be above a lot of the clouds, and they could see better. The telescope would work better. They designed this telescope brilliantly. They also designed it so it'd be in a good place, a good situation, to be able to make discoveries. Well, that's what we've basically figured out, that the Earth and our place in the cosmos has been situated to allow for discovery. Now, that has only come along in the past few hundred years, but it's as if, for the Christian, it's not difficult to see where this is headed. It's as if God delights in his children eventually unraveling the wonders of his creation at ever greater levels. And so he sets up this tutorial kind of step-by-step process where we can move from one depth to another depth to another depth, and, you know, discover more and more. Go from basic chemistry until now we're at quantum chemistry, right? We're trying to unravel inside the atom, quarks, and the wave-particle duality of light, and on it goes.
I want to emphasize in this chapter, well, the whole book, but this chapter in particular, is written against what we call disanthropism. Anthropism is just from a Greek word meaning anthropos, meaning a human being. It has been the case for, say, depending on who's counting, 100 years, 200 years, 400 years, that our Western mind has been seized by what we call disanthropism, which means that simply the human beings are not the center of creation. They're a mere byproduct, one among billions of planets around billions of suns that were in no way special. The universe has belched out any number of planets, probably far superior to ours, with intelligent life of kinds far beyond what we can even understand. We argue that the latest science actually points to a universe which is designed for human beings. And that we mean, as Jonathan was saying, in two senses. If you really look at all the conditions that are necessary for human life to exist, you find out that you can check off most of the universe, both in time and in space, as uninhabitable. And the more we look at the conditions, the very exacting conditions that life on Earth requires, these delicate, exacting conditions are so extraordinary that it's almost impossible to imagine them occurring elsewhere at all. In fact, we can scientifically show that various areas and times and places of the universe, such things would be impossible. What that does is it shows us that human beings in a very real way define the goal of the cosmos, because part of our argument is that everything from the Big Bang forward, from the nature of the elements, the chemical elements themselves, all point in the direction of a culmination in human intelligent life.
Yeah, and we don't suggest that there couldn't be other purposes to the universe. God's purposes are beyond us to fathom fully, certainly in this life. But obviously a very important and crucial purpose of the universe was human life.
One of the things, I suppose, that reductionism has to face, philosophical naturalism, is how purely materialistic processes can produce genius in the first place.
Exactly. And this on all levels. One of the examples that we give as a product of genius is not that complex at all. It's water. It's right around us all the time. It's in church, it's in your home, we look at it, but it is an extraordinarily well-designed compound which couldn't possibly have, it's quite obvious that water didn't become the basis of life because it was just a little bit better than some other compounds. In fact, it's one of the very signatures of where you can look for life in the universe. Can this place support water?
Yeah, it may have been several decades ago that serious scientists would have said, oh yeah, there may be silicon-based life, or there may be hydrogen cloud life, some of the weird stuff we get in the old Star Trek series. Now, all the astrobiologists, whether they're atheists, Christians, Jews, what you name it, they're looking for carbon-based life in a watery, liquid, watery environment. Not because they're unimaginative or, they somehow have stunted inabilities to consider options, but because they've studied and found that these two chemicals are bizarrely fitted, and they outstrip their competitors by so much that it looks like that whoever designed the universe, the atheist wouldn't put it this way, of course, it was pushing toward making sure there was carbon and there was water, because he had some great things in mind to do with those two things down the road.
Give us some kind of perspective on what reductionism, materialism, nihilism has done to the West.
We spend a good bit of time on that in the chapters early, and when we look at Shakespeare. But we could go at this for hours. But in a nutshell, nihilism grows out of materialism, though it's a complex relationship. Nihilism says there's no ultimate meaning. The only meaning is meaning that we manufacture. I remember a film that came out a few years ago, The Sheltering Sky, and the idea was it had John Malkovich in it, and the idea was, I don't recommend it, though it was a great distillation of nihilism, because the narrator basically says, well, the sky is our shelter because beyond it is absolute nothingness. He didn't mean the stars and space. He meant our little world that we create. We create these little islands of meaning. Beyond that, there's no real meaning. It's ultimately nothingness out there. And that grows rather naturally out of materialism, which says that matter is all there is. Matter is all that matters. That passionate love that the young man has for the young woman that he thinks is so great, and he's going and digging around for his Byron and his Shakespeare to try to communicate it, and his songs on the radio that are so full of passion. Well, no, that's ultimately just hormones, chemistry. It's a trick of genetics to propagate those genes. There's ultimately nothing meaningful or rich or deep at all to it. And some people say, "Oh, you're being paranoid that materialism would lead to these kind of things." It's not paranoia. It's knowing your history. Marxism, Nazism, most of the great horrors of the 20th century grew very directly. I'm not saying if you're a a nihilist or a materialist, you're going to be a Nazi or you're going to be a communist. I'm not saying that at all. There's some very, you probably have some wonderful neighbors that are materialist and atheist. But those ideas very naturally lead to the idea, wait, if we're just matter and energy, if we're just animals in the jungle, why not act like animals in the jungle? Why not have my little herd try to destroy? Now, the counter argument is, wait a minute, but Christians have behaved badly in history. Christians have had wars. Well, the Christian worldview doesn't expect humans to behave brilliantly. We're fallen creatures. The amazing thing is what Christianity has done to civilization, to raise it up as far as it did. When humans are following Christianity, they move away from things like Nazism and the communist purges, you know, that killed millions of people in the 20th century. But Hitler was interpreting Darwin in a very straightforward way. Hey, the Aryans, well, let's be the top kind of breeding group, and let's wipe out the other breeding groups so that we can prosper, you know, that we're going to make up our own meaning and our own values because there's no God in the universe, so we'll make it up ourselves. So those are some really obvious, you know, heavy ways that nihilism and materialism have affected us, but we see it in more subtle ways in our advertising, in our music, popular music that's, you know, grows coarse and presents us as just, you know, so many instincts, you know, obey your thirst, you know, Sprite, you know, not to pick on Sprite, but, you know, obey your thirst. Is that a really good kind of motto for life? Well, if you're just matter and energy, or you're just an animal, maybe it is.
Yeah, that is important that this has resulted in what has been called a culture of death. That is a culture in which we see a belief so permeated that life ultimately doesn't have any meaning. And therefore, you have to, as it were, ad hoc, create meaning by yourself. And you are a mere pleasure-seeking, pain-avoiding animal. What we try to argue is that view comes from, or is ultimately vindicated by, an appeal to a particular kind of science. Again, the one that follows in the ruts of reductionism and materialism. If we can question that view of science so that view no longer supports pop nihilism or the kind of nihilism that you find so fashionable among the intellectual elite in our universities, then they can't appeal to science. In fact, they have to admit that science points in the other direction.
So we see this as an antidote to Richard Dawkins, who was really saying that it is religion that is the root of all evil.
Indeed. I mean, his claims are so bad in the book, I almost wanted to email him and ask him whether I could rewrite it and make it better so it could be at least a reasonable argument to argue against. It's very weak. But he, for example, as
it
you
it does
point,
have a nice cover, though.
It does. It always has a nice cover. But it he argues about how much Christianity has contributed to evil. But if we have to be crude, if you did a body count of the 20th century in regard to the destruction caused by atheism, all the centuries combined, not just Christian destruction, but all the centuries combined do not add up to the body count caused even just by Marxism alone in the 20th century, let alone all the wars that had no religious foundation at all. So, I mean, some of his claims are just laughable. But in any case, as we said before, you can't meet Richard Dawkins just by laughing at him. We wanted to supply the kinds of scientific, philosophic, literary arguments that we can just purge our culture of this kind of an argument.
Yeah, in one of the early chapters, we actually grapple with Dawkins directly because he has this analogy and he has this computer simulation that he shows, hey, evolution using Darwinian natural selection, it can create information, it can create meaning and form. Look, and he gives the example of a passage from Shakespeare's Hamlet. Methinks it is like a weasel. This is where Polonius, the king's, you know, right-hand man, is looking up at a cloud and Hamlet is pretending to see all these different things and Hamlet says, I think it looks like a whale, and Polonius is trying to go along with him because he thinks he's nutty, and Hamlet is messing with him and getting him to agree to all these totally contradictory, you know, ideas about what this cloud looks like. But Dawkins, you know, totally ignores all that and says, look at this computer simulation, how it can gradually build up this phrase, methinks it is like a weasel, and that's perfectly analogous to Darwinian evolution. Well, the problem at a basic level, and this has been pointed out before, is that his computer simulation already has the word, and he thinks it is like a weasel, in the computer program. It's the target phrase to which every time a letter, you know, matches that target phrase, then the program keeps it. So it's looking ahead. It's teleological, to use a theological, philosophical phrase. Darwinian evolution can't look far ahead. It can only go one tiny step at a time. So he's basically put information, he's put meaning, he's put foresight, and foresight is strictly the realm of intelligence. And we go beyond that and talk about how he's reductionist in a lot of other ways, too, with that passage. Have a lot of fun with it.
This is an extraordinary book, A Meaningful World. We want to discover just how meaningful it is, and you want to get the book to do that, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature. Ben Weicker, Jonathan Witt, extraordinary men, godly men, that are being used for time and for eternity, not the least of which through this book, A Meaningful World. You want to get it right away, 888-7000 CRI. You can also order online at equip.org. Right back with your questions for Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt.
Do the heavens declare the glory of God, or are they just a product of astronomical chance? Our guests argue that the cosmos, as well as our existence here on Earth, are the product and work of a creator. In their book, A Meaningful World, they succinctly and effectively prove through art, literature, and science that God's signature is on all of creation. Order your copy today. Call 888-7000-CRI. Find it online at equip.org. We'll dig deeper into the discussion on the other side of this break, so stay with us. From the outside, Houston preacher Joel Osteen is charming, attractive, and his teaching, well, it makes you feel good. But the truth is, Osteen preaches a seductive and highly dangerous form of Christianity that's leading millions of people astray. That's why Hank Hanegraaff has written a book called The Osteenification of American Christianity, and it's why you must get your own copy today. You must be able to defend yourself with truth about what Joel Osteen really teaches. And this important resource arms you with everything you need to do so. Please call today and request your copy of The Osteenification of American Christianity, 888-7000-CRI. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Meaningful or meaningless? Purposeful or pointless? When we look at nature, what do we find? In stark contrast to our culture's claims that the world is meaningless, the cosmos are actually charged with both meaning and purpose. Find out for yourself when you order A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. Call 888-7000-CRI. Far from simplistic religious jargon, A Meaningful World draws from fields as diverse as mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, and even the arts to make a solid argument that if God so fashions the intricate tapestry of creation, He must give the same care to our lives. Order your copy and find meaning in the world around you. Call 888-7000-CRI and ask for your copy of A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or order online at equip.org.
When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, "Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity." Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.
Thank you.
tuned in to the middle of a fascinating discussion here on The Bible Answer Man. If you wish to find tangible evidence that points to a creator and to hope for our souls, CRI recommends A Meaningful World by today's guests. Far from simplistic religious jargon, A Meaningful World draws from fields as diverse as mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, or even the arts to reveal a cosmos charged with both meaning and purpose. You'll find A Meaningful World to not only be logical and clear, but also fascinating as well. To order your copy, call CRI right now at 888-7000-CRI. Again, that's 888-7000-CRI. And you'll also find it on our website at equip.org. Well, let's return now to the discussion. And here once again is the host of The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. And again, a reminder, you can get the book through the mail as well. Just write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As you said, an extraordinary book and a conversation with Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt. The book is available right now. Give our resource consultants a call, 888-7000-CRI. Let's go to the phone lines, take a call. Vince, listening on KGNW in Seattle, Washington. You're on with Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt.
Hi, Ben. Hi, John. Hi, Hank.
Hello. My
22-year-old son, he believes in God very much. But his problems are that God manifested into the body of Jesus Christ. And when I witness to my son, I come from the point of, well, if God has designed us, he could easily manifest a body within Christ and to come to our earth to take on our sins and to remove the barrier of sin between us and God. So my question to you is, how can I link some sort of scientific aspect in the scriptures, particularly concerning Jesus Christ?
Yeah, that's a tricky question, and so maybe we better both answer, and then you can choose which one you want. Or maybe let Hank answer, choose which of the three. I would say this, that you would not reason from science to the incarnation. In fact, that would be impossible. What you can do is remove the obstacles to faith. That is, if there are particular obstacles, that is a philosophical misunderstanding, a misunderstanding of what science is, a misunderstanding of God, either on the philosophical level or the theological level, those obstacles can be removed. But the incarnation is a mystery. We can describe in accordance with what God has revealed, but it's not something that is deducible or explainable except under terms that I think the Christian Church has tried to explain. So yeah. You can prepare the ground, but the seed has to be planted by God.
Right. Ben said that very well. I would only add that by way of clarification, that it's not that the incarnation is unreasonable. It's that it is, think of a computer that doesn't have the processing power to handle some huge software program, to put it in very crude mechanistic terms. We don't have the processing power to fully comprehend God and some of the things he's done. Doesn't mean it's unreasonable then to believe in the incarnation. In fact, it's the most reasonable thing to believe and expect that the creator of the universe, the creator that we look at in this book and show how amazing and how ingenious he is, we should expect that creator to outstrip our ability to fully understand him. We should expect him in places to do things that are beyond what we can fully comprehend.
I think I've chosen Jonathan's answer. I like that one because it brings in, this may be an obstacle, you say, you know what, nature outstrips our ability to understand it because it is made by a genius. We can dig and dig and dig, but nature isn't irrational, it's super rational. It reaches down to us, it accommodates to our merely human understanding, it draws us up, and we realize it's more wonderful than we can grasp. But that gives us the kind of humility which would allow us to accept something like the incarnation, that something really can be above our reason, not irrational, but super rational.
And I would just continue to pray for a better understanding of what maybe your son is, what's kind of holding him up. It may not be immediately clear what the obstacle is. And then, you know, maybe once you have a better sense of that, then of course pray that you can say the words, that his heart will be open to maybe come across some evidence that points him away from that mistaken thinking.
This leads to another question. How do you deal with the problem of suffering as well as apparent bad design? You talk about God as being a genius, exceeding our ability to fully comprehend. But a lot of people will say there's some really bad design in the universe, and they don't fully grapple with the issue of constrained optimization.
Yeah, we tackle this problem from two or three different angles. One is a lot of the claims of bad design, like, oh, humans' backs and whatnot aren't perfect, or our planet could be so much better if we didn't have plate tectonics, which cause earthquakes. Well, as it turns out, plate tectonics are crucial to the long-term viability and health of our planet, because it helps in the carbon cycle, and on you could go. Well, that's just one instance of where somebody takes one particular thing and says, oh, well, you could make that better. Well, you know, this notebook computer in the next room, it could be better theoretically if the screen were as big as as a big screen TV, couldn't it? Well, yes and no. The screen would be bigger, and in a sense it would be better, but would you really want that as your notebook computer? No. Constrained optimization, you're bringing together a series of things that you're trying to achieve, and you're trying to come up with the best balance of those factors. Well, humans could be faster if they wanted to be, or think of something about humans that you could try to improve, but it might mess something else up. But then we also look at a different, and a lot of those unravel when you look at those bad design. But then we also can see, well, you know, there's some things that look pretty bad, you know, like the bubonic plague. That just seems pretty bad, you know, and pain and suffering in the world. Our book's not primarily focused on that. We wouldn't send somebody to our book. This is the ultimate source for answering these questions. But we do come back to this point that now that we see that God is a genius, an extraordinary genius, we should expect for his ways, his decisions, to outstrip our understanding, our ability to fully understand what he's up to. And once we have that more humble approach, then we can be open to thinking things like this. Humans that are extremely rich and wealthy and that are able to remove as much of their difficulties as possible, much of their pain, they're more prone. It's not inevitable, but they're more prone to pride, to a whole series of pathologies. Maybe God understood that a perfectly pain-free, difficulty-free, challenge-free existence for fallen humanity was not what humans needed. That was not what was best for them. That was not what was going to lead to their ultimate happiness and blessedness.
Maybe this ultimately leads us to understand the words of Job when he said, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Once you understand the glory and the grandeur of God and the fact that he has created a meaningful world, you can also more fully trust him and understand that while you cannot understand how to make a single drop of dew, you can trust the God who has.
Yeah, and well I think, said. Yes, well said, and we can see that same kind of trust in science. That it's important that this, it certainly happens in faith in regard to these questions, but scientists too face things in nature they don't understand, but they trust that they will be able to uncover it, these things, and make them intelligible. That is, they have an inherent trust that science can get somewhere, that the universe is meaningful, that is, that these paradoxes can somehow be later understood if we only dig. And all that we would ask is, well, why shouldn't you have the same trust in regard to God? That is, you don't understand all of nature. Why are you thinking that you would understand all of the genius of nature?
Yeah, this trust that scientists have and that had as they were founding the different scientific disciplines, that there was this hidden order, this hidden rationality. a lot of the earlier scientists made this explicit. They attributed it to their belief in a rational maker. Later scientists just adopted that kind of policy and really didn't think about where what worldview led them to behave that way. And ultimately, they were able to just to say, well, look, it's worked before, and so I'm just going to keep doing that. So you get to the situation where you have atheists or agnostics who keep looking for rational order, and they're forgetting the foundation of science was based on that trust. Hey, I don't understand this. This seems irrational. It doesn't seem to come together, but I'm going to trust that God had some sort of order, had some sort of purpose, and I'm going to keep digging. Now, and we can apply that same humility, Ben's saying, to the Christian faith, to the Bible.
Is it then not a science stopper to fail to realize that we live in a meaningful world?
I think ultimately it is. And you probably, if there's any hardcore Darwinists out there, they're probably apoplectic because one of their favorite criticisms of intelligent design is that intelligent design is a science stopper. They say, oh, if you don't understand something, you just say, oh, God did it. You know, well, we don't understand lightning. Well, God did it. Well, we don't understand how the planets go around the sun. Well, God did it. Well, 2 points. One, the history of science is the opposite. Guys like Kepler and Newton said, wow, God's a rational maker. Let's figure out how he set the universe up so that this all works. Secondly, these materialists, by saying ultimately there's not disorder, they'll often say, no, the disorder is just disorder. It's not just apparent disorder. For instance, junk DNA. There's realms of the genetic, you know, information coding in our bodies that they can't figure out what it's for. Now, it's possible some of that is messed up stuff. You know, we know that our own bodies are you know, fall apart and grow old and die. But more and more biologists are discovering, wait, this junk DNA has some fascinating purposes that we're unraveling. ID scientists early on were going, maybe this isn't junk. Maybe this is serving some sort of purpose, and we just haven't gotten there yet. So where was the science stopper in that situation?
I agree wholeheartedly with that. That is, it wouldn't be a science, or let's look at Shakespeare. It's not a Shakespeare stopper to say that there is layers, or there are layers and layers of depth and meaning to Shakespeare. Just keep digging. You'll see it fit together in all kinds of wonderful ways you never imagined. How could that be why would that somebody stop reading Shakespeare? It would seem you would stop reading Shakespeare if you believe, for example, that Freud was right about Shakespeare and that everything Shakespeare wrote was really reducible to these brute sexual urges. Our argument is that this is the best way to approach science, as if the universe is full to overflowing with meaning. That's going to make you look in every corner for connections.
I feel like I've discovered some treasure by discovering Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt in their book, A Meaningful World. You can discover that treasure as well by ordering the book immediately when you give us a call at 888-7000-CRI. You can also order the book, A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature, by logging onto the World Wide Web at equip.org. Of course, you can order via the mail when you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. We'll be right back with more of Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt. Don't you dare touch that dial.
Do the heavens declare the glory of God, or are they just a product of astronomical chance? Our guests argue that the cosmos, as well as our existence here on Earth, are the product and work of a creator. In their book, A Meaningful World, by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt, they succinctly and effectively prove through art, literature, and science that God's signature is on all of creation, and therefore has inherent meaning. As our culture becomes more secular and cynical, this will prove to be an invaluable resource. So order your copy today. Call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Find it online at equip.org. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip 28271. We'll dig deeper into the discussion on the other side of this break, so stay with us here on the Bible Answer Man. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.
Meaningful or meaningless? Purposeful or pointless? When we look at nature, what do we find? In stark contrast to our culture's claims that the world is meaningless, the cosmos are actually charged with both meaning and purpose. Find out for yourself when you order A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. Call 888-7000-CRI. Far from simplistic religious jargon, A Meaningful World draws from fields as diverse as mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, and even the arts to make a solid argument that if God so fashions the intricate tapestry of creation, He must give the same care to our lives. Order your copy and find meaning in the world around you. Call 888-7000-CRI and ask for your copy of A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or order online at equip.org.
The battle for authentic Christianity has never been more intense. That's why Hank Hanegraaff has written a book called The Osteenification of American Christianity. As the title suggests, osteenification is nothing short of the wholesale transformation of American, indeed global, Christianity. It is the prime provocateur of a seductive brand of Christianity that reduces God to a means to our ends and beckons multitudes to the table of the Master. Not for the love of the Master, but for what is on the table. You need to defend yourself and those you love against these insidious teachings. Please call today to request The Osteenification of American Christianity. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Tuned into the middle of a fascinating discussion here on The Bible Answer Man. Together, our guests have penned an honest and comprehensive investigation into nature, inner earth, and outer space. The culture would have you believe that we are a random accident, coming from nothing and concluding in nothingness. However, this point neither satisfies the soul nor echoes of truth. If you wish to find tangible evidence that points to a creator and to hope for our souls, CRI recommends A Meaningful World by today's guests. Far from simplistic religious jargon, A Meaningful World draws from fields as diverse as mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, or even the arts to reveal a cosmos charged with both meaning and purpose. You'll find A Meaningful World to not only be logical and clear, but also fascinating as well. To order your copy, call CRI right now at 888-7000-CRI. Again, that's 888-7000-CRI. And you'll also find it on our website at equip.org. Well, let's return now to the discussion. And here once again is the host of The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt with me. Their book, A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature. And the two of you have gone to great length to make this book accessible to the lay reader. You have worked on this book for some 4 years to really give us a meaningful book.
Yes, it was a long haul, but we hope and think that it was worth it.
Yeah, we would pull in, you know, I'd pull in, I can't tell you how many times I pulled my wife in and told her, read this, and as soon as you hit something that we think is clear, but we're just kidding ourselves, flag it. And she was ruthless and said, yep, you got to go back and make that clear, make that more accessible.
Back to the phone lines. I want to talk to Alan in Hutchinson, Kansas. You're on with Ben Weicker and Jonathan Witt.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your patience, by the way.
No problem. I am a physician in Kansas, and as I'm sure you're all very well aware, we have been the center of many debates regarding evolution in recent times here in Kansas.
I went to the University of Kansas.
So did I, twice. So yeah. Nice, I went there twice. And in my training, through my undergraduate work in microbiology and then through medical school, it was very obvious to me God's quote-unquote intelligent design in the human body. And, you know, he has just written his name all over every organ system in our bodies because it's just fascinating and amazing how incredibly designed they are. And there are very many things that we don't yet fully understand about the body. My question for you is that in my area of practice, in pediatrics, as it is across medicine as a whole, we are seeing a dramatic increase in antibiotic resistance. And I've heard the term microevolution used to describe this phenomenon that we are seeing more and more every day, even in small children in my practice on a daily basis. However, it seems to me that in this situation, when you're discussing microorganisms and bacteria in specifics, there is not really the creation of new material. It is transfer of genetic material and information between different organisms. And I was just wondering if you could speak on that.
Yeah. Some of the Discovery Institute intelligent design theorists have done a lot of work on the microevolution issue. One in particular, Scott Minnick at the University of Idaho. And he has shown a couple of interesting things. One is that there, of course, and he's not working in isolation, he's confirming a lot of other research, there are severe limits to how far these, for instance, these bacteria can evolve, and that once they have evolved, say, antibiotic resistance, you put those, that resistant strain, back in among the normal population, who do you think dominates? Is it the super-duper antibiotic-resistant one? No. It gets wiped out by the ordinary guys,
suggesting that
antibiotic resistant strain has sacrificed a certain amount of functionality to get there, pointing out and reinforcing what we know from in many other realms of experience in biology, that there are limits to how far those things can evolve. So there may be some microevolution, but it's very limited. It may involve, you know, minor little point mutations in DNA. But the large information building processes that you need to build new limbs, new organs, new you know, things like blood clotting system, we've never witnessed that.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that that we don't want to get a confusion about even how to interpret that. The question is it, can it be interpreted using basic materialist assumptions that it's only about a shuffling of DNA, almost like shuffling of letters to create new words, or is the cell itself necessary for that kind of a small change to occur? That is, in other words, we look at things from a top down, a whole part, a living to a chemical part like that, it looks different than a mere reductionist account. Another thing to take into account is if you were making something as a human being, wouldn't you wish that you could make a self-correcting machine that could adapt itself fairly quickly to new conditions? That would be optimal design. It would be bad design if it couldn't do that. And so we see in everything from cells to animals, the ability to adapt within a kind of circle to changing in conditions. And that seems to me to be rather ingenious, not something that upsets Christianity at all.
Yeah, there was a recent poll done by it was the Finkelstein Institute, which is not a Christian polling firm. It is a scientifically done poll, and they found that 60% of U.S. medical doctors see evidence of intelligent design in the human body. And that flies in the face of a lot of the Darwinists who talk to the media. Their claim that there's no scientific debate going on. There's just a few kooky people on the sidelines. There's no knowledgeable, really informed, sane people. Well, to make that claim, first of all, you have to ignore hundreds of scientists, for instance, that have signed a Dissent from Darwin statement, many of them leading scientists. But you also now have to somehow explain away that a majority of medical doctors, you have to claim that, oh, well, somehow that's not a relevant area of discipline. You know, having expertise in the human body, that's not relevant. They're not evolutionary biologists. They'll say crazy things like that. Try to claim that your expertise, Ellen, does not bear on the question at hand. And that's just ridiculous.
Well, I would say that if only 60% of physicians had agreed with intelligent design, that the other 40% probably weren't paying much attention in medical school.
Right. My brother-in-law, my sister and brother-in-law are medical doctors, and well, my sister's now a stay-at-home mom, but she and he both noticed that they'd come in and there would be lots of agnostic or atheist among them, but by the first or second year of med school, they had all graduated to at least agnostics because of the wonders of the human body.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate your input, and Rock Talk Jayhawk.
Thanks, Ellen.
God bless you, Ellen. One of the things I think you might want to touch on for just a moment is the fact that we are, in our academic disciplines, being brainwashed. All of the evidence on one side of the ledger is being portrayed and glamorized, and all of the evidence on the other side of the ledger is being dismissed. Yeah, that's not education.
Right, and that's what happened in Kansas. There were some scientists and advocates for teaching students not only the evidence for Darwinism, but some of the mounting weaknesses, some of the growing evidence against that theory. They weren't even suggesting that they explicitly teach the theory of intelligent design, much less bring in the book of Genesis. But the Darwinists, of course, got in a panic, and they presented the whole thing as an attempt to insert intelligent design into the classroom, an attempt to bring in religion. You know, there's even a book, Creationism's Trojan Horse, you know, if you know the legend of Troy and how Odysseus came up with this big wooden horse, and he snuck it through the as a gift into the Trojans' city. But of course, it had Greeks in it, and they came out and destroyed the city at night. And the Darwinists are saying intelligent design is just a Trojan horse for creationism to get us back to a theocracy. They're not only paranoid; they're completely oblivious to history. That Christianity and this belief in this rational creator was a big fuel for the revolution that is science. And that paranoia also should be heartening. It's discouraging that they're able to scuttle that very modest attempt to give students balance in the Kansas classroom, but it's also be heartening because it tells us how scared the kind of extreme Darwinists are of letting students simply see both sides of the case. They're terrified of the evidence.
I think that's a good point. They wouldn't be yelling so loudly if they weren't getting worried, and they'll admit that. It's making headway, and our book is, again, designed to get around the kinds of objections that they normally give, because no one can say it's using bad science. We just use the latest science.
Speak to the importance of a mom or a dad putting this book into the hands of a high school senior before they head off to university.
I think that is, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. We're both.
We're both excited about that. Well, yeah. I just had one of my friends said this book, after reading it, this book should be in the hands of all sophomores before they go off to college. And I think that is a good idea. That is, what you're doing is giving students, before they get to sort of the jaded areas, a much more profound understanding of how science actually works, of the best and latest arguments, so they're not merely coming unarmed. They have a book that allows them to understand how they can tackle the kinds of objections and the kinds of bad science and philosophy they're going to meet.
It's a capstone book. I mean, you often have a senior in high school or even senior in college, you'll have a capstone course where you bring in synthetic books, books that bring together the arts and sciences in fascinating ways, and I think that fits that gap beautifully.
I love what my good friend Phil Johnson said about this book. He's the author of Reason and the Balance and the Right Questions. He said, "A Meaningful World is a wise and witty romp through the fallacies of reductionism. It is illustrated by charming examples that show how literature and science both teach us that we live in a world full of meaning, not the spiritually dead world in which the materialists would confine us. A Meaningful World is a must read. It's available right now. How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature. Give me a call at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. Of course, you can order via the mail at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Ben Weicker, thank you so much for two extraordinary hours.
Thank you so much.
And Jonathan Witt, as always, we are just delighted to have you in studio, and thank you for the book you produced.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you for having us here.
And these are men that I hope will feature in the future in the Bible Instrument broadcast. Again, Ben Weicker, Jonathan Witt, A Meaningful World. You don't want to be without it. Give us a call right now, 888-7000-CRI, or just log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Instrument broadcast. Look forward to seeing you next time with more of the show.
We want to extend thanks to Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt for joining us these last 2 days, shedding light on the ways that nature, physics, and history itself all point to a creator. In stark contrast to our culture's claims that the world is meaningless, our guests reveal a cosmos charged with both meaning and purpose. Find out more about their findings and their airtight conclusions in the pages of A Meaningful World, looking into such diverse fields as Shakespeare, Euclid's geometry, physics, and biology. It makes a solid argument from this evidence that if God so fashions the intricate tapestry of creation, He must give the same care to our lives. Call 888-7000-CRI and ask for your copy of A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or order online at equip.org. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip 28271. The Bible Answer Man is on the air because truth matters. This broadcast is a production of the Christian Research Institute. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, "Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity." Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.
Meaningful or meaningless? Purposeful or pointless? When we look at nature, what do we find? In stark contrast to our culture's claims that the world is meaningless, the cosmos are actually charged with both meaning and purpose. Find out for yourself when you order A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. Call 888-7000-CRI. Far from simplistic religious jargon, A Meaningful World draws from fields as diverse as mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, and even the arts to make a solid argument that if God so fashions the intricate tapestry of creation, He must give the same care to our lives. Order your copy and find meaning in the world around you. Call 888-7000-CRI and ask for your copy of A Meaningful World by Benjamin Weicker and Jonathan Witt. That's 888-7000-CRI or order online at equip.org.